I felt Charity's eyes on me, and I glanced back at her. She gave her head a brief, stiff nod. I took down the wards, and we went inside. Mister came over and rammed his shoulder against my legs, then wound his way around between Thomas's legs, accepting a few token pats from my half-brother. Then he surprised me by giving Charity the same treatment. I shook my head. Cats. No accounting for taste. Charity looked around my apartment, frowning, and said, "It's very well kept up. I had expected more debris." "He cheats," Thomas said, and headed for the refrigerator. I ignored them. There wasn't time for the full ritual cleansing and meditation, but my day had exposed me to all kinds of stains, external and otherwise, and I considered the shower to be the most indispensable portion of the preparation. So I went into my room, stripped, lit a candle, and got into the shower. Cool water sluiced over me. I scrubbed my skin until it was pink and washed my hair until my scalp got sore. The whole while, I sought out a quiet place in my mind, somewhere sheltered from pain and guilt, from fear and anger. I pushed out every sensation but for the bathing, and without conscious effort, my motions took on the steady rhythm of ritual. Something commonplace transformed into an act of art and meditation, like a Japanese tea ceremony. I longed for my bed. I longed for sleep, warmth, laughter. I pinned down those longings one at a time and crucified them, suspending them until such time as my world was a place that could afford such desires. One last emotion was too big for me, though. Try though I might, I could not keep fear from finding a way to slither into my thoughts. Little Chicago's maiden run was an enormous unknown quantity. If I'd done it all right, I would have myself one hell of a tool for keeping track of things in my town. If I'd made even a tiny mistake, Molly was dead, or worse than dead, and I'd get to find out what the light at the end of the long tunnel really was. I couldn't escape the fear. It was built into the situation. So instead, I tried to make my peace with it. Fear, properly handled, could be turned into something useful. So I made a small, neat place for its use in my head, a kind of psychic litter box, and hoped that the fear wouldn't start jumping around at the worst possible moment. I got out of the shower, dried, and slipped into my white robe again. I kept my thoughts focused, picked up my backpack and the white envelope, and went down to the basement lab. I shut the door behind me. If Little Chicago went Nova, preventative spells I'd laid to keep energies from escaping the lab should mitigate the damage significantly. It wasn't a perfect plan by any means, but I'm only human. Which was a disturbing thought as I stared at the model on the table. Even a tiny mistake. Only human. I set the envelope at the edge of the table, my backpack on a shelf, and went around the basement lighting candles with a match. A spell would have been faster and neater, but I wanted to save every drop of power for managing the divination. So I made lighting each candle a ritual of its own, focusing on my movements, on precision, on nothing but the immediate interplay of heat and cold, light and darkness, fire and shadow. I lit the last candle and turned to the model city. The building shone silver in the candlelight, and the air quivered with the power I'd built into the model. Some tiny voice of common sense in my head told me that this was a horribly bad idea. It told me that I was making decisions because I was in pain and exhausted, and that it would be far wiser to get some sleep and attempt a spell when I stood a reasonable chance of pulling it off. I crucified that little voice, too. There was no room for doubts. Then I turned to the table and to the elongated circle of silver I'd built into its surface.